家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是 Larry， 欢迎大家加入我们的互动 QQ 群，群号码是331-7640。每到周末，我们都会来聊一聊 TED TED Talk， 希望对大家的雅思和托福学习有所帮助。那今天呢，我们请来的嘉宾老师还是 UEI 学校的壮壮老师，老师好。
Hello everybody, and we have two speeches for this session. 这次给大家准备了两段，都是对于技术比较感兴趣的同学会觉得比较有意思。第一段呢是 robots 就是机器人but these robots can show emotion. In this speech, David Hansen, who is a robotics designer, discusses the look and act.Of robots. They can actually recognize and respond to emotion and make expressions of their own. Here, an emotional live demo of the Einstein robot offers a peek at a future where robots truly mimic humans.好，他提到了这个机器人模仿人类的表情，他呢不光是能自己做出表情，并且能对真人的表情能够察觉和识别。然后呢，这个科学家呢自己设计了一个叫爱因斯坦的机器人，他的长相就跟大家知道爱因斯坦的形象，胡子，然后那个头发那样，但是他做的是个机器人爱因斯坦。这个爱因斯坦呢也能够发出表情啊。这个讲座呢就讲的是这么一个机器人，咱们来听一下。
I'm Dr. David Hansen, and I build robots with character. And by that I mean that I develop robots that are characters, but also robots that will eventually come to empathize with you. So we're starting with a variety of technologies that have converged into these conversational character robots that can see faces, make eye contact with you, make a full range of facial expressions, understand speech, and begin to model how you're feeling and who you are and build a relationship with you.I developed a series of technologies that allowed robots to make more realistic facial expressions than previously achieved on lower power, which enabled walking biped robots, the first androids. So it's a full range of facial expressions simulating all the major muscles in the human face, running on very small batteries, extremely lightweight. The materials that allowed the battery-operated facial expressions is a material that we call frubber, and it actually has three major innovations in the material that allow this to happen. One is hierarchical pores, and the other is a macromolecular nanoscale porosity in the material. He's starting to walk. This is at the Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. I built the head, they built the body. So the goal here is to achieve sentience in machines, and not just sentience, but empathy.We're working with the Machine Perception Laboratory at the UC San Diego. They have this really remarkable facial expression technology that recognizes facial expressions, what facial expressions you're making. It also recognizes where you're looking, your head orientation. We're emulating all the major facial expressions and then controlling it with the software that we call the Character Engine. And here's a little bit of the technology that's involved in that.So his perception of your emotional states is very important for machines to effectively become empathetic. Machines are becoming devastatingly capable of things like killing, right? Those machines have no place for empathy, and there's billions of dollars being spent on that. Character robotics could plant the seed for robots that actually have empathy. So if they achieve human-level intelligence or...quite possibly greater than human levels of intelligence, this could be the seeds of hope for our future. So we've made 20 robots in the last 8 years during the course of getting my PhD, and then I started Hansen Robotics, which has been developing these things for mass manufacturing. This is one of our robots that we showed at Wired Next Fest a couple of years ago, and it sees multiple people in a scene, remembers where individual people are, and looks from person to person, remembering people.So we're involving two things. One, the perception of people, and two, the natural interface, the natural form of the interface, so that it's more intuitive for you to interact with the robot. You start to believe that it's alive and aware. So one of my favorite projects was bringing all this stuff together in an artistic display of an android portrait of science fiction writer Philip K. Dick, who wrote great works like Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which was the basis of the movie Blade Runner. In these stories, robots often think that they're human, and they sort of come to life. So we put his writings, letters, his interviews, correspondences into a huge database of thousands of pages, and then use some natural language processing to allow you to actually have a conversation with him. And it was kind of spooky because he would say these things that just sounded like they really understood you. And this is one of the most exciting projects that we're developing, which is a little character that's a spokesbot for friendly artificial intelligence, friendly machine intelligence. And we're getting this mass manufactured. We specced it out to actually be doable with a very, very low cost bill of materials so that it can become a childhood companion for kids. Interfacing with the internet, it gets smarter over the years. As artificial intelligence evolves, so does his intelligence.
Thank you so much.
好，听完了啊，我觉得大家一定心中在想了，是吧？这个机器人都能模仿人类表情了，它还有什么不能做的呢？啊，可见就是技术呢发展还是真是有点意思。那你说这种东西到底有什么用呢 ，Larry？ 比如说，你会想起来在家使一个能对你的表情识别的机器人吗？
嗯，没必要啊。但是我另外觉得啊，机器人它是一个，如果它能够表达自己的情感的话，也许很多孤独的人，
哎，
像独居的老人啊，像这个孤儿，他们可能就有陪伴了。
对呀，就是它不是机械的，只是听指令完成任务，它还能啊自己发挥一点小表情，嬉笑怒骂啊，喜怒哀乐。那其实也挺好的，
嗯，特别是像一些服务行业，像餐厅，
嗯，
很多现在餐厅里都有一些机器人服务员。如果这些机器人微笑的话，那顾客肯定更高兴。
所以说呢，我觉得机器人呢还是很有市场。那咱们再说这机器人和真人来讲，你比如说真人，像我要找一个保姆，他还得自己得吃饭。对吧，他得洗澡，他得要消耗，可是机器人就不需要这些了，对不对啊？你就只要给他保证电池充足就完事儿了，所以他省略了好多的这个消耗，
嗯，成本也降低了
啊。所以呢，我真是挺期待这个机器人能真正走入到老百姓的生活之中。
嗯，
这一段呢，我觉得对于技术来讲还是挺向往的。而这个讲话呢是发表于2009年的2月，那现在已经6年过去了，是吧？现在是15年，那这个机器人希望它已经成型了，真是很想打听出来它到底在哪儿卖啊。说到这个技术，我们不得不又引出我们的第二段。那么这一段呢是关于电子邮件，邮件已经很平常了，对吧？谁每天几乎都要收邮件。那么请 Larry 给我们说说这一段讲话，他到底对这个邮件会有什么新的这个介绍呢？
The topic of this speech is think your emails private. 哎，说的是这个 email 啊，哎，是不是这个私人化的？
对，很有隐私，保护你的隐私。你觉得你的邮件就没人看吗？
没有吧，因为我的邮件是有密码的。
然后会讲到加密这一个词，叫 encrypt 啊 ，en。C-R-Y-P-T
嗯哼，然后它还有一个名词的形式叫做 encryption. Sending an email message is like sending a postcard, said scientist Andy Yan in his talk. Anyone can read it, yet encryption, the technology that protects the privacy of email communication, does exist. 它首先是承认保护 email 隐私的这种加密技术啊，它是存在的。
Mm-hmm.
然后他又说 It's just that until now it's been difficult to install and it's a hassle to use.
也就是说呢，这个加密的这个程序呢很难去安装，并且呢使用起来呢也比较麻烦，比较繁琐。
And in his speech he also showed a demo of an email program he designed with colleagues. 在这个演讲中呢，他也给大家展示了他和他同事所设计的一个电子邮件软件。
嗯哼。
And he also argues that encryption can be made simple to the point of becoming the default option, providing true email privacy to all.
哦，那就是在默认的状态就可以把它设置成邮件受到加密保护。
那我们来听一下他的这一段演讲录音。
好。
25 years ago, scientists at CERN created the World Wide Web. Since then, the Internet has transformed the way we communicate, the way we do business, and even the way we live. In many ways, The ideas that gave birth to Google, Facebook, Twitter, and so many others have now really transformed our lives. And this has brought us many real benefits, such as a more connected society. However, there are also some downsides to this. Today, the average person has an astounding amount of personal information online. And we add to this online information every single time we post on Facebook, each time we search on Google, and each time we send an email. Now, many of us probably think, well, one email, there's nothing in there, right? But if you consider a year's worth of emails, or maybe even a lifetime of email, collectively, this tells a lot. It tells where we have been, who we have met, and in many ways, even what we're thinking about. And the more scary part about this is our data now lasts forever. So your data can and will outlive you. What has happened is that we've largely lost control over our data and also our privacy. So this year, as the web turns 25, it's very important for us to take a moment and think about the implications of this. We have to really think. We've lost privacy, yes, but actually what we've also lost is the idea of privacy itself. If you think about it, most of us here today probably remember what life was like before the internet. But today, there's a new generation that is being taught from a very young age to share everything online. And this is a generation that is not going to remember when data was private. So if we keep going down this road, 20 years from now, the word privacy is going to have a completely different meaning of what it means to you and I. So it's time for us to take a moment and think, is there anything we can do about this? And I believe there is. Let's take a look at one of the most widely used forms of communication in the world today, email. Before the invention of email, we largely communicated using letters. And the process was quite simple. You would first start by writing your message on a piece of paper. Then you place it into a sealed envelope, and from there, you would go ahead and send it after you put a stamp and address on it. Unfortunately, today, when we actually send an email, we're not sending a letter. What you're sending, in many ways, is actually a postcard. And it's a postcard in the sense that everybody that sees it, from the time it leaves your computer to when it gets to the recipient, can actually read the entire contents. So the solution to this has been known for some time, and there's many attempts to do it. The most basic solution is to use encryption. And the idea is quite simple. First, you encrypt the connection between your computer and the email server. Then you also encrypt the data as it sits on the server itself. But there's a problem with this, and that is the email servers also hold the encryption keys. So now you have a really big lock with a key placed right next to it. But not only that, any government could lawfully ask for and get the key to your data. And this is all without you being aware of it. So the way we fix this problem is actually relatively easy, you know, in principle. You give everybody their own keys, and then you make sure the server doesn't actually have the keys. This seems like common sense, right? So the question that comes up is, why hasn't this been done yet? Well, if we really think about it, we see that the business model of the internet today really isn't compatible with privacy. Just take a look at some of the biggest names on the web, and you see that advertising plays a huge role. In fact, this year alone, advertising is $137 billion. And to optimize the ads that are shown to us, companies have to know everything about us. They need to know where we live, how old we are, what we like, what we don't like, and anything else they can get their hands on. And if you think about it, the best way to get this information is really just to invade our privacy. So these companies aren't going to give us our privacy. If you want to have privacy online, what we have to do is we've got to go out and get it ourselves. For many years, when it came to email, the only solution was something known as PGP, which was quite complicated and only accessible to the tech savvy. Here's a diagram that basically shows the process for encrypting and decrypting messages. So needless to say, this is not a solution for everybody. And this actually is part of the problem. Because if you think about communication, by definition, it involves having someone to communicate with. So while PGP does a great job of what it's designed to do, for the people out there that can't understand how to use it, the option to communicate privately simply does not exist. And this is a problem that we need to solve. So if we want to have privacy online, the only way we can succeed is we get the whole world on board. And this is only possible if we bring down the barrier to entry. I think this is actually the key challenge that lies with the tech community, What we really have to do is work and make privacy more accessible. So last summer, when the Edward Snowden story came out, several colleagues and I decided to see if we could make this happen. At that time, we were working at the European Organization for Nuclear Research, at the world's largest particle collider, which collides protons, by the way. We were all scientists, so we used our scientific creativity and came up with a very creative name for our project. Proton Mail. Many startups these days actually begin in people's garages or people's basements. We were a bit different. We started out at the CERN cafeteria, which actually is great, because look, you have all the food and water you could ever want. But even better than this is that every day, between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m., free of charge, the CERN cafeteria comes with several thousand scientists and engineers. And these guys basically know the answers to everything. So it was in this environment that we began working. What we actually want to do is we want to take your email and convert it into something that looks more like this. But more importantly, we want to do it in a way that you can't even tell that it's happened. So to do this, we actually need a combination of technology and also design. So how do we go about doing something like this? Well, it's probably a good idea not to put the keys on the server. So what we do is we generate encryption keys on your computer. And we don't generate a single key, but actually a pair of keys. So there's an RSA private key and RSA public key. And these keys are mathematically connected. So let's have a look and see how this works when multiple people communicate. So here we have Bob and Alice who want to communicate privately. So the key challenge is to take Bob's message and to get it to Alice in such a way that the server cannot read that message. So what we have to do is we have to encrypt it before it even leaves Bob's computer. And one of the tricks is we encrypt it using the public key from Alice. Now this encrypted data is sent through the server to Alice. And because the message was encrypted using Alice's public key, the only key that can now decrypt it is the private key that belongs to Alice. And it turns out Alice is the only person that actually has this key. So we've now accomplished the objective, which is to get the message from Bob to Alice without the server being able to read what's going on. Actually, what I've shown here is a highly simplified picture. The reality is much more complex, and it requires a lot of software that looks a bit like this. And that's actually the key design challenge, is how do we take all this complexity, all this software, and implement it in a way that the user cannot see it. I think with Proton Mail, we have gotten pretty close to doing this. So let's see how it works in practice. Here, we've got Bob and Alice again, who also want to communicate securely. They simply create accounts on Proton Mail, which is quite simple and takes a few moments. And all the key encryption and generation is happening automatically in the background as Bob is creating his account. Once his account is created, he just clicks compose, and now he can write his email like he does today. So he fills in his information, and then after that, all he has to do is click send. And just like that, without understanding cryptography, and without doing anything different from how he writes email today, Bob has just sent an encrypted message. What we have here is really just the first step, but it shows that with improving technology, privacy doesn't have to be difficult. It doesn't have to be disruptive. If we change the goal from maximizing ad revenue to protecting data, we can actually make it accessible. Now, I know a question on everybody's minds is, okay, protecting privacy, this is a great goal, but can you actually do this without the tons of money that advertisements gives you? And I think the answer is actually yes, because today we've reached a point where people around the world really understand how important privacy is. And when you have that, anything is possible. Earlier this year, Proton Mail actually had so many users that we ran out of resources. And when this happened, our community of users got together and donated $500,000. So this is just an example of what can happen when you bring the community together towards a common goal. We can also leverage the world. Right now, we have 250,000 people that have signed up for Proton Mail, and these people come from everywhere. And this really shows that privacy is not just an American or European issue. It's a global issue that impacts all of us. It's something that we really have to pay attention to going forward. So what do we have to do to solve this problem? Well, first of all, we need to support a different business model for the internet, one that does not rely entirely on advertisements for revenue and for growth. We actually need to build a new internet where now our privacy and our ability to control our data is first and foremost. But even more importantly, we have to build an internet where privacy is no longer just an option, but it's also the default. We've done the first step with ProtonMail, but this is really just the first step in a very, very long journey. The good news I can share with you guys today, the exciting news, is that we're not traveling alone. The movement to protect people's privacy and freedom online is really gaining momentum. And today, there are dozens of projects from all around the world who are working together to improve our privacy. These projects protect things from our chat to voice communications, also our file storage, our online search, our online browsing, and many other things. And these projects are not backed by billions of dollars in advertising, but they found support really from the people, from private individuals like you and I, from all over the world. And this really matters, because ultimately, privacy depends on each and every one of us. And we have to protect it now, because our online data is more than just a collection of ones and zeros. It's actually a lot more than that. It's our lives, our personal stories, our friends, our families, and in many ways, also our hopes and our aspirations.
大学生英语在线，欢迎您继续收听。
这一段呢，其实涉及了大量的就是电脑方面的词汇，所以如果大家是对电脑这块是你的专业，或者是你今后的研究方向，不妨把这一段再多听听啊 ，encryption 啊 ，coding 和 decoding 啊，还有 program 这个词是可数的，但是 software 是不可数的。那当你说我这个电脑运行了三个软件的时候，中文就把这个软件变成可数的，英文就变成了 three software programs。
嗯哼，然后呢，刚才提到的一些关键词，像 encryption 加密，这个其实可以用在很多地方。
对，说起加密这个技术呢，大家都知道这个 online payment and online transaction 最大的一个顾忌就是网络的安全啊，你就是怕比如说你的信用卡密码啊、银行密码啊被盗用等等。我还跟从事技术的一个同学聊过这事儿，他说呀，手机和网上的银行，从技术角度来讲，都不是安全的，都可以被破译。
没错，
他可以用这个编写一个程序，把人设置的密码通过排列组合，在一秒钟运算好几千次那么快的速度下，都试过一遍，找到那个能通行的那个密码。
没错，那我们用户手机用户能够做的就是尽量设置一些比较复杂的，别人一般计算不出来的密码。那比如说，这个密码必须要有数字，有字母，
哎，
而且字母还得有大小写之分。
没错，
通常情况下有大小写字母组成的密码是比较难破译的。
好，但是同时来讲呢，我记得我看过另外一个 TED 演讲，他就讲呢，美国统计出来呢最常见的密码你知道是什么吗？
12345678、
哎、没错，当然是12345678。所以说大家在设置密码的时候你尽量躲着，还有就是什么11111六个一，这种密码，那就这就跟没加密一样，
也简直就是送给人家的密码。
没错，还有就是你的生日也是送给人家的密码，
还有你的这个手机号的一部分。
没错，
还有你身份证号的一部分，这些是最忌讳的，
最忌讳的。所以大家自己在这个自己加密的时候呢，你也不妨动动脑筋。可是你有时候弄得太曲折了吧，你自己都记不住了，结果人家打不开吧，你自己也打不开。
这个是个问题，
是吧？好，今天我们就聊这些。那大家有兴趣呢，可以再去回放我们的录音。如果意犹未尽呢，还可以加入我们的 QQ 群去聊。Our QQ group number is 3317640。
331764040，欢迎加入这个 QQ 群331764040，下载最新的英语学习资料。那今天节目就是这些，感谢庄庄老师的陪伴，我们下期节目再见。
See you next time。
给你一个机会，你最想得到什么东西？
汽车
，money，
豪宅，
漂亮女朋友，
芭比娃娃。
健康。
北京人民广播电台提醒您，关爱自己的健康，才能带来长久的幸福。
backyard, pull up in your fast car, whistling my name. Open up a beer and you say get over here and play a video game. I'm in his favorite sundress, watching me get undressed, take that body downtown. I say you the bestest, leaning for a big kiss, put his favorite perfume on, go play a video game. It's you, it's you, it's all for you, everything I do, tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you, tell me all the things you want to do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey. Is that true? It's better than I ever even knew. They say that the world was built for two. Only worth living if somebody is loving you. Maybe now I do. Swinging with the old stars, living for the fame. Kissing in the blue dark, playing pool and wild ducks, video game.
You're right. Right.
He holds me in his big arms, drunk and I am seeing stars. This is all I think of. Watching all our friends fall in and out of old balls. This is my idea of fun. Playing video games. It's you, it's you, it's all for you. Everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you. Tell me all the things you want to do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey. Is that true? It's better than I. Place on earth with you. Tell me all the things.